Welcome to the Ghost Gig. Are you sitting comfortably? Then let's begin.
Hello. Hello, Alice.
Good day, everyone. Sorry, we were yabbering away and didn't realise it was recording.
It was definitely recording.
Okay.
Well, I might leave that in.
Yeah, why not? He's talking total bollocks while it's recording.
Yeah, because that's different to normal.
Yeah. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Ghost Gig. Hope you all had a very scary Halloween. Should we do the spooktacular thing?
Yeah, we probably should, shouldn't we?
Okay. I hope you had a 1, 2, 3 spooktacular.
Oh, I forgot it.
How could you fluff that?
I forgot. I was put under pressure, and the pressure got to me.
Shall we do it again?
Yeah.
Hope you had a 1, 2, 3
spooktacular.
Well done, gold star for you.
Yay!
We had a really good Halloween. It was really fun. It was great to actually be able to do stuff again
in costumes. And silly.
Yes.
Loud.
Brilliant.
Fun.
Check out our Instagram page and our new Facebook page, and you will see pictures of our costumes.
Yes, that brand new social networking site that no one's heard of yet.
It's new for the Ghost Gig.
Yeah, I know.
You dickhead. Yeah, so check us out if you want to look. No one's saying you have to.
Coming next week, MySpace.
Listen.
And Face Party.
I set up a new Facebook page this week. Okay, so it's new for us. Thank you very much. Yes, I've had Facebook since I was 14, but obviously the podcast is new, all right, on Facebook. And on there, you can see pictures of us in our costumes, and there's even a little video of us doing a performance of Talking Heads' So Good Killer. So if you would like to listen to that, come on to Facebook or Instagram.
I'd like to listen to that.
Well, you can.
Great.
On Facebook or Instagram.
Perfect.
Lovely.
Actually, I haven't heard it through yet. I probably will listen to it at some point.
Okay, well, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
We're going to put some more stuff on there, hopefully, as well, because we did also do a couple of our own original songs, I believe, on the Van Helsing episode. So hopefully they'll be coming up soon as well, if you want to listen to those.
And I'm sure we'll be hosting other recordings you make of other performances of some of our songs at events.
Yeah.
I don't know, it depends. Yeah. I feel like there's times when we're going to start doing, like, other versions of our songs if we're sitting around bored at some point. So maybe those will go up. Who knows?
I mean, I think the general idea is, it's not just a podcast. It's also a music brand, dare I say. So
feels a bit dirty saying it like that.
Yeah. Who knows? I think we're just kind of playing around and seeing what happens at the moment, aren't we, really?
We are playing.
Yeah.
So, it's fun.
Thank you to everyone again who's
listening. You for playing with us.
Thank you for playing with us.
We're leaving that in.
Come and play with us.
And thanks to all who've liked the Facebook page. I think we've got around 100 or something.
Just over 100 this morning.
Yeah, which is cool. Facebook is very inconspicuous compared to Instagram. I can't quite figure out how to communicate with people on there. So thank you for liking it.
I thought you said you had it since you were 14.
I have, but not the fan page. I can't see how many people like it or have to message people. I will figure it out. Yes, I've had it since I was 14, but I'm also like old now. So, I can't figure it out.
It's true. She's got a Zimmer frame.
I just sound really youthful.
It's got Go Faster stripes on it, but she's got a Zimmer frame.
Me down the street. Zoom. That's me. Anyway, talking of social media, on Instagram, we had a film recommendation from the Crossroads podcast.
Oh, okay.
And that recommendation was The Hills Have Eyes. And that's what we went for.
Do they live near any hills?
I don't know. They just
We should have asked. You think of the perfect thing to say after the conversation?
Yeah. Oh. I put a post up saying film recommendations. They recommended that. Thought it was a good one because I know it's a bit of a classic and neither of us have seen it. So
yeah, that's true actually. Yeah.
And it was the original 77 film that we saw.
It was. Like Wes Craven's second ever feature.
Yeah. So again, I'm sure you guys know it, but it's a family are travelling through the hinterlands, basically, and they break down and are terrorised by another family of, of cannibals, basically, isn't it?
That's the premise of the film.
So without further ado, I guess we'll play my song first.
I guess we shall.
Okay.
I'll do that now.
Go for it.
Two families alike in dignity, in the fair hills where we lay our scene. This satisfying piece of of pulp in a film guaranteed to make you bulk. I was drawn in straight away,
straight away, straight away,
like I was lost too in the barren landscape,
barren landscape,
barren landscape. Safe to say I was gripped,
I was gripped, I was gripped,
even though the cast looked like Aberrejects, Aberrejects, Aberrejects. Oh, just remember the most important thing. The human mind is terrifying. This could really happen. This could really happen. It's really survival of the fittest.
The cannibals versus the bigots.
One side screams and the other side shouts, and Craven Sixth Street gets a true workout. The two families mirror themselves,
mirror themselves, mirror themselves,
and drag each other through heaven and hell,
heaven and hell,
heaven and hell. I share their sense of helplessness,
helplessness, helplessness.
Thank God for Beast and his directness,
directness, directness. Oh, just remember the most important thing. The human mind is terrifying. This could really happen. This could really happen.
Now shying away from blood and gore,
blood and gore, blood and gore.
If you're gonna do it, give it your all. It's a punch in the throat and a kick in the teeth,
kick in the teeth, kick in the teeth,
and so intense you forget to breathe,
forget to breathe, forget to breathe. Oh, just remember the most important thing. The human mind is terrifying. This could really happen. This could really happen.
That was Alice's song.
Yeah, so I hope you enjoyed that weird crying.
I enjoyed the strange excursion we had on that one.
I don't know how that really happened, but I'm quite pleased with the result. So
absolutely, yeah.
Great. Vince, would you like to play your song?
Yes.
Okay.
A bit less now I've heard yours, but I still should.
I'm excited to hear it.
It's the pattern, it's the formula we've gone for.
Yeah.
We've dug a hole.
Digging holes. Cutting corners and digging holes.
We're not cutting corners, we're very astute. Anyway.
Go for it.
Hilly Eyes.
Hilly Eyes, go for it.
I am caged. We're all slaves to what we know. We know that we are all on our own with our greed. Now the distance between us draws closer, I can see. So I'm gonna kill you before you do the same to me. Did we make this life made us? These hills have eyes, these hills have bad blood. I don't think you should stay, and I won't dig your grave. Now the distance between us grows closer than I choose. There's one rule for my family, another for you. Did we make this life made us? These hills have eyes, these hills have bad blood. Always wanted to die young with
distance between us draws closer, I can see. So I'm gonna kill you before you do the same to me. You made this life made us. These hills had eyes, these hills had bad blood. Maybe you could get out alive, or at least you'll try.
Basically, you think everyone's a moron, innit?
Not all. I enjoyed the film. I'll preface to that. Everything else I say, I enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, we're talking horror films. Lots of characters have to be idiotic or else you don't get a horror film.
That's so true.
You know, if they read the script, they probably wouldn't have showed up that day.
Yeah. That's so true, actually. If a lot of horror film characters did as normal people would do, they would be in the film. That's so, very true.
But it just seemed a bit weird to me that a trained veteran cop drives off of the road into nothing and breaks his axle because she heard a fighter plane.
I thought this was a really good film, and there's a few things that made me really be really, really engrossed in it.
Oh,
the thing was the soundtrack, or lack of.
Yes.
It's
not goofy ever, is it?
It was sparse, but when it happened.
Yeah.
The other thing, and this kind of mirrored, was the barren landscape and like the set they used and where it was filmed,
which was like a character in the whole thing. I've heard people say that sometimes about other things, but the scenery of the landscape was such an integral part of
everything. Just tone of the film, the hopelessness of the situation.
Yeah.
And for me, and I felt like I said in my song, I felt like I was right there in it with them. You just thought, oh shit, this is just carnage, and there's going to be no happy ending here.
No. I remember actually when just after we finished watching it, you commented, that wasn't paranormal at all. I don't know if we can even review it.
Yeah.
Not all horror films are paranormal. No. It's just horrific.
But it was just
horror in a purest sense.
As I said, this could really happen. And yes, it's not paranormal, but it is terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely terrifying. I thought, the script and the acting was just good. It was just really, really intense. They did look like Abba rejects, as I said in my
they did
wearing and how their hair was, but that's the 70s, that's how it was back then, so that did make me laugh.
I think realistically, I know it was made on a really small budget, so presumably they had to get the actors out into the middle of nowhere, and they couldn't really get a stylist on board, so they just said, you know what, that's the hair you showed up with, that's the hair you're going to have. And it was the 70s, as you say.
Yeah.
So that's probably was the hair they just had.
Yeah,
they probably didn't really think about it. In the same way that if we were to shoot a film tomorrow in the woods or something, we probably wouldn't change our hair either.
So for me,
we'd look really dated in 40 years' time.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
And I guess for me, that was a slight distraction, but that was not the fault of the film at all. It's just because we're 40 odd years on and things are different now.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd bother to watch the remake, really, because I thought that was.
I'm not too concerned about it.
Really, I just, yeah.
It might be that the remake had something really, really big to it.
Yeah.
I know Wes Craven was involved in it still, so it's probably quite good. But
But I don't know, I was trapped in there.
If enough people were to rally around us and tell us actually we should really give it a shot, then actually I'd be up for it.
Yeah,
I don't want to do it immediately.
If you've seen it and you would recommend it, then cool. But no, I mean. I don't really have a bad word to say about it. I was really, really engrossed in it. It did scare me. It got inside my head. And that's the thing I really look for in a horror film, for it to actually get in my head and for me to actually be able to imagine myself in that situation.
Yes.
Don't you think?
It was nicely paced. I like the tone of the whole thing. It had a style about it.
Mm.
And it wasn't just the kind of the film stock that's on it. I think it was shot on something cheap, probably like 16mm film or something, because it has that kind of grindhousey look, although quite polished for grindhouse, because the cinematographers and the directors know what they're doing. So it's slick, but made with cheaper equipment.
Yeah.
But it does have a style about it and a whole tone that it brings on.
It's
just desolate, isn't it?
It's a desolate feel.
Desolate is a really nice way to just summarise it.
At the start, I thought it was pretty desolate because both the families have got the, you know, neither family are good, really.
They're morally desolate.
Yeah, morally desolate.
There you go. I did the intelligent.
It doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't happen often. But thank you for witnessing this.
Obviously, the family of Cannibals are monsters, but in a way, the other family are too.
I think they're just functioning on their own completely separate scales of morality.
They are, yeah, and they're sort of following their own social cues,
yeah.
But which is worse, in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
But I mean, the cannibals are worse because they're killing people. But
well, they both kill people in the end.
Yeah,
they both decimate the other.
It's reduced to, isn't it, basically? And you, the fact you... Oh, can we talk about the dogs?
Yes,
the fact
yes.
that the dogs, they're basically aren't behaving any better than the dogs are.
No, not at all, no.
It was a very triumphant moment. When
the dogs
were
cleverer.
Yeah, the dogs were cleverer, yes.
Well, Beast was. Beauty obviously got gubbed, because Beauty must suffer first.
Obviously, because the woman must suffer first before the man.
But Beauty literally dies, and then the Beast takes over, which, you know...
Yeah,
it's the preeminent.
Exactly,
the,
ooh,
preempting the family. It's preempting the family's actions there.
That is very clever. There's so many layers to this, and you can keep digging and going. Oh, that's really cool. Oh, that's really clever.
Well, they know what they're doing. I don't think they spent ages writing this script when I did a bit of looking into it.
No,
it was written quite in a hurry relative to what you would normally write for a film.
Well, they say in Shrek, it's like an onion. There's layers.
This is not a cake.
No,
this makes you cry.
Everybody loves cake, but not everyone likes onions. That horror, isn't it?
That's probably true.
You find it in everything.
Welcome to the Onion Podcast.
What was it?
The preeminent paramusical show about onions.
I wanted to cheer when Beast actually mauled the guy, because you know you just wanted. That's what you wanted to happen, and you weren't sure if Beast was alive or dead, and obviously they play on the heartstrings using animals, don't they, as well?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well,
I mean, Beast, I think, has become a kind of a legendary animal within horror films and in cinema. He looks like he's being a very good boy for most of it, because his tail's wagging when he's doing lots of the action. He's having a lovely day out.
Bloodthirsty dog, is it? I always enjoy that, seeing, you know, these terrifying animals, and then sort of, you know...
Because we even commented the first time that the dogs are supposed to be whimpering and things, they look really happy, and they just clearly just dubbed the audio because of, you know.
Yeah,
it's
like the cat in
constraints,
like,
but they're going.
The cat in Pet Sematary.
But actually, the dogs are really cheerful, like they're about to be given a treat. It's just, it's horrible. It's like they've dubbed the dogs. What's going on?
The cat in Pet Sematary is sort of clearly looking for its treat, you know.
True, yeah.
I always enjoy that. And young children as well, sort of, you know, when they're, you can hear the crying baby, but the baby sort of looking around going,
The baby just looks a bit bemused, but there's a distressed, gurgly cry in it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, it's in the desert. I mean, it probably wasn't that happy. I imagine the deserts. I've never been to Nevada. I'd love to go, but I get the impression it's pretty damn hot during the day and very, very cold at night.
What did you think of the ending? Because they left it pretty open, didn't they? I mean, obviously it ended with the guy.
I think it had the ending. It had the ending it should have had.
Yeah, because there was still people alive on both sides. Basically, the baby was almost like the prize to be won, wasn't it?
Well, it was called MacGuffin, essentially, wasn't it? Yeah. And it probably wasn't called MacGuffin, but yeah, it was a MacGuffin by the end.
Called MacGuffin.
No, but it was a MacGuffin by the end.
Yeah, but I thought that was pretty. I think there was a sequel. I like the way it ended. It could have been either side, basically.
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't cave to pressure and put some kind of Hollywood ending on, which I assume there was pressure, because there would have been almost no names.
Yeah. In fact, it might be interesting to see the remake, just to see if that's what they do at the end of the remake, because I bet you they don't.
Possible.
I bet you they don't. Who knows?
You know what? Yeah, maybe that's enough of a compelling reason.
But there's this kind of tug of war battle all the way through the film, and at the end you still didn't know who'd won.
I mean, there were no winners.
There were no winners. Well, no, not really. I mean, either side are horribly traumatised and have lost members of their family, but they will continue to fight, won't they, until one side is vanquished, basically.
Vanquished.
Vanquished. That's a good word.
It's all very noble.
Yes, and the baby is the prize, and I like the fact you still don't know at the end. So I would recommend this. We were watching it on Amazon, and I thought it was really, really good.
There is some really engaging stuff in it. Yeah. I like if you were to buy the old optical media, the main cover art is usually Michael Berryman, I think his name is, who was, we recognised, we were commenting, he looked a bit, interesting, and like, yeah, he's become quite a cult figure as well in horror and other things.
Oh, warning, it does not stint on the blood and gore. So
I think that it could have easily gone a lot more given the style of film it is. Yeah, I reckon they were probably, I reckon they had to cut some out.
Okay.
I reckon they had to cut some out for censors.
I thought they really went for it, but fair play.
I think it's definitely gory, it's ugly, it's brutal, but actually like visceral on-screen red slop, it doesn't really do that much of.
No.
Compared to lots of other things in that kind of wheelhouse.
I thought they really went for it, but no, fair, okay.
I mean, there's definitely, you know, when Beast is mauling people and there's stringy spaghetti and red slop everywhere. That's fun, but it's not like grotesque everywhere.
It's not just the blood, it's when they're burning the body and there's some pretty harrowing bits in it.
There are.
So it's
I mean, the dad gets crucified. Yeah, that's pretty grim.
Graphic, so just a warning about that. But that's why I couldn't take my eyes away. I mean, as I said, that's what I really look for in a horror film, for it to completely engross me and for it then to be in my head for the next day or so. So, yeah, I would thoroughly recommend it. And if you've already seen it, watch it again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably perhaps not the most deep recommendation ever, but yeah.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it.
I was impressed. I thought it was really good. Anything else to add about that?
Oh, I'll probably think of something.
Okay. Well,
I'll just interject with your story because I know that your story is related to this, but I don't know this story. I came across the name when my research was like, ooh.
Yeah.
So I'm quite interested to learn this. Maybe I'll interject, but I probably won't because that would be bad form.
So as with The Exorcist, this was actually based on a true story. Okay.
Good.
Or should I say a legend?
Ooh, a legend. I do like a legend.
It's a legend. It's a big table that was...
Is there Will Smith in it?
Oh, right. Sadly not. I mean, yeah, he wasn't around at the
time. Actually, we should watch Last Man on Earth, which is basically the same film, but Vincent Price in the 50s.
Ooh.
It's one of the really early, not zombie films, but a zombie film.
I'm always up for Vincent Price. It's the only reason I do this podcast with you is because you're called Vincent.
I know. You've said that a few times. Reason. This is the first time you said it on air, though, so that's well done for the restraint.
Everyone was thinking it, so I might as well
say it. It's true.
So, would you like to know about the legend behind...
I really would.
And I can't believe I've not sort of read about this before, because it's awesome. So, here we go. Okay? Please die quietly.
I'll try. Do you think that's what happens in these stories that you're about to tell? Did they die quietly?
I don't think it would have been quiet.
I mean, I'm guessing this isn't a spoiler to say, they didn't die quietly, guys!
No, I don't think.
It was mucky.
So... Wes Craven, the well-known horror film director, released the movie The Hills Have Eyes in 1977. It was received reasonably well at the box office and the general public, and then has somewhat become a cult classic. The inspiration behind the movie, however, comes from hundreds of years ago, and in fact, thousands of miles away, all the way back to 16th century Scotland.
Well done trying the accent. I'm curious to see whether you're going to keep this up or if you're brave enough to do so.
I'm really sorry if there's any Scottish people listening. I think it's a beautiful accent. And if I do try and do it and it's shit, I am so, so sorry. It's no disrespect at all. I'm just trying to make it authentic.
Well, if you do it, we'll all just be quietly disappointed with you. And we'll just move on with our lives.
But apologies in advance. So this is the legend behind The Hills Have Eyes. So, it is during the reign of King James I, who was also James VI of Scotland. Travellers making their way through Ayrshire in Scotland started going missing, but the authorities could not quite figure out why. So here we meet Sean Bean and his family.
Sean Bean?
Sean Bean. Shawnee Bean?
This is your story. Well, it's not your. It's your telling of the story.
S-A-W-N-E-Y. So I'm guessing Shawnee? That's Shawnee Bean.
You probably should distance from Sean Bean.
Yeah, Sean
the
Bean.
Actor.
But then we call him Mr. Bean, which is even worse.
You're right.
We'll call him Shawnee or Bean. I'm going to have to call him Bean because that's the only thing I can really do. As the story goes, Bean was born in East Lothian and raised by a father who was a ditch digger and a hedge trimmer. At first, it seemed that young Bean tried to follow in his father's footsteps and make an honest living. However, just like Jupiter in the movie, it was clear that he was bound for a much darker destiny. At a young age, he eloped with Black Agnes Douglas, as she was known. She was a woman who shared his bloody nature. It's nice to have something in common.
Absolutely. It's good they have something to bond over.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
Yeah.
What a love story. I wasn't expecting that.
It's not entirely clear how many children they had, and then grandchildren. A rough guess is that the incestuous family managed to reach about 48 members over a 25-year span.
Jeez.
I know. I feel sorry for the women. They lived in an idyllic setting in a cave by the sea, and they never had any contact with the outside world. That is, apart from robbing and murdering unsuspecting, weary travellers. However, Bean and his family were not your average run-of-the-mill killers. Oh, no.
Doesn't sound like run-of-the-mill or average anything.
The bodies of people they killed were by no means wasted. They were cooked and eaten.
It's good that they were environmentally aware.
They're very green, aren't they?
Yeah.
Very green. The family would wait until nightfall, then creep out of the cave. They'd jump the unfortunate travellers, then drag them back to their grotesque home. Then, without so much as offering them a cuppa, they would dismember them. Annoyingly, human flesh doesn't stay fresh for very long, and they didn't have a fridge, so they pickled and salted the body parts to preserve for later.
You would have to.
So yeah. I've got an extract here, and this is from a guy called Alexander Smith, and he wrote a book called A Complete History of Lives and Robberies of the Most Notorious Highwaymen. And that was published in 1719.
Neither did they ever frequent any market or any sort of provision, but as soon as they robbed and murdered any man, woman, or child, they left no carcass behind them, but carried it to their den, where cutting it into quarters would pickle them and live upon human flesh.
Ooh.
So, pretty grim stuff.
Absolutely.
So once the family had had their feast, the remains of their dinner would be chucked out onto the picturesque shore. Sometimes the bones were discovered by villagers. Luckily for the Bean family, the disappearances and strewn body parts were blamed on the local innkeeper, which
doesn't seem very fair.
You've described it twice as picturesque, and I'm thinking if there's a beach covered in bones, you know, in human chunks, it doesn't sound very picturesque.
No, but it was picturesque before they put the bones and chunks on there.
So
this poor innkeeper was arrested and I think killed for these murders.
Jeez.
And also it was blamed on wild animals, which you can kind of see.
Yeah.
So this family of cannibals was thought to be responsible for the deaths of over 1,000 men, women and children. They didn't spare women and children. It was just whoever wandered around, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So going back to Mr. Smith's book, he writes,
his wife, 8 sons, 6 daughters, 18 grandsons, 14 granddaughters, begotten in incest. As you can imagine, that's a lot of hungry mouths and grumbly bellies to feed.
Hence over 1,000 or so.
Yeah.
Exactly. Victims.
Exactly.
However, they eventually slipped up. The family had kidnapped a couple, and the woman was already dead and was being prepped as a starter.
Warning, this is pretty harrowing for anyone with a, you know, who might not want to hear this.
Are you eating dinner right now?
If you are eating dinner, you might want to stop. This is pretty grim.
It was recorded that this lady was cut at her throat by one of the female cannibals. Her belly was then ripped up and her entrails pulled out. This was all done in front of her husband's eyes. He, however, managed to escape.
Not surprising, as it sounded like the cannibals were quite distracted at the time.
He rushed to the nearest village, alerted the authorities.
Can you imagine that, though? I mean, how traumatised would you be having seen that happen in front of you?
And then you need to get away quick and,
And that you think they'd be chasing me. I mean, he must have been in an absolute state. So he goes and he finds civilization, basically, and he tells the authorities.
And soon an expedition was mounted to capture the family. This was a 400-strong group of men headed up by none other than King James himself.
So I always like this idea that the king actually went out with the troops. Can you imagine Boris Johnson doing that now?
I'm guessing it's more like he went out to be seen and to oversee activity rather than go rooting through bushes himself. You never know, but
I just like the idea of like the main figurehead going out and, you know, putting himself in danger too. And if there was a serial killer out now, you wouldn't see Boris Johnson sort of bumbling around with the police trying to help them, would you? Really, I don't think
they'd have him along.
No, just stay in the back and have a, you know, give him a lollipop or something, you know.
Well, there is the photo I saw recently. He's standing with a load of police officers, but he's got his hands behind his back, and it looks like they're just taking him. It's very unfortunate, but I'm really going off piste here. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, good for King James, that's what I say.
They searched high and low for the cave, and they used bloodhounds to pick up the murderous scent.
When the king and his party discovered the family's lair, they actually thought they'd found the wrong place. They couldn't quite believe this was somewhere that humans actually inhabited, but it was the right place, and it was the stuff of nightmares. Quoting again from Mr. Smith's book.
To their great surprise, the legs, arms, thighs, hands, and feet of men, women, and children hung up like dried beef, and some limbs lying in pickle, a great mass of money, both gold and silver, watches, swords, pistols, and a great quantity of clothes, both linen and woolen, an infinite amount of other things, which they had taken from all that they had murdered.
So they hoarded all their stuff.
Well, I mean, sensible.
And it's saying they didn't even go to markets or anything like that.
So I'm wondering how they got vinegar.
True. Well, maybe like they must have gone out at some point. I mean, but they've got enough cash and jewellery to get whatever they like, haven't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's horrific, but it's very clever. And then I just write, that would sure be enough to put you off your porridge. Because it would.
It would?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Under the king's orders, the family was seized, and any remaining pieces of human flesh were buried in the sands as a final attempt at dignity at what must have felt like the doors of hell.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's nice that they tried at least to.
That was the thing at the time.
Murder in the 17th and 18th century was viewed as, and still is, one of the most heinous crimes known to man. Adding cannibalism to the mix just seemed like rubbing salt in the wound. Bean and his family had taken the crime one step further and had feasted upon human flesh, which is completely forbidden in the Bible. Otherwise, presumably, everyone would be doing it. That's what I got from that.
Maybe they would, I don't know.
It just sort of said, you know, I was like, so if the Bible says it's okay, I don't know.
I think we're getting out of horror at that point.
Here we are.
It's a different kind of podcast.
Such an outrageous crime deserves an outrageous punishment. So how best to make these deprived monsters suffer? Do you want to have a guess at what they did to them?
I mean, I'd like to think that if it's following the eye for an eye sort of thing, they would kill several of them and then feed them to their relatives, but they probably, deciding to be upstanding Christian citizens, they probably didn't do that.
Not a bad guess.
But that would feel like that's, if you're going to be brutal about it, that's probably what you'd do. But I suspect, yeah, they would have decided that they're the moral upstanding ones, so they probably didn't.
They didn't do that.
Hanging and drawing and quartering, I know, was still a thing at that point.
Yeah, yeah,
so, you know.
Not bad.
Because that's pretty grim. That's
hanging
until almost dead, then they pull your attention out while you're alive and you have to watch them coming out of you. You know, that doesn't sound fun either.
Yeah. You're not too far off, actually.
Yeah?
With the hanging, drawing and quartering. So,
okay.
This is a quote from Lincoln B. Fuller, who was some egghead at the time. I'm quite sure, I did try and find out who he was, but he just seems to be a clever person.
A journalist or something? Yeah. I mean, he could write, so presumably, so that's a pretty good start.
So, this is what they did to them.
Mm-hmm.
The men, without process or any manner of trial, had their privy members cut off and flung into the fire before their faces.
Then their hands...
A fire of burning willies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. There you go, that's the theme for next Halloween.
Well, that's the title for this episode, isn't it? Fire of Burning Willies.
You shouldn't laugh, oh my God. It's making me feel funny and I don't even have one. Fire of Burning Willies.
Then their hands and legs were cut off by witch amputation. They bled some hours to death.
Ooh.
All this torture being justly inflicted upon them.
Right.
Yeah, fair.
In the case of the wife, daughters, and grandchildren, they were then all burnt in three several fires, all dying like the men too, without repentance, but cursing and venting dire imprecations to their last breath.
So they literally just burned the women and children.
They burned them, yes, and they swore a lot, which I think is a completely acceptable thing to do under those circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. So a local historian has put down his reasons for this on paper. So, he writes...
The Bean family's 25-year spree of robbery and cannibalism accounted for over 1,000 victims, according to the tale, and it caused a general outcry in the country roundabout, and the whole country must have been almost depopulated.
So, they would have...
I was thinking when you first said 1,000 people,
back
population
then.
Of Scotland would not have been that high at that point.
Exactly.
One might presume then that some mention of this would be found in family papers, correspondence and memoirs of the period, but nothing has ever been sufficed, or nothing has ever been shown. The account of Bean appears in Pitcairn's Criminals Trials of Scotland, but there's no record of the trials of the travellers and the innkeepers who were, according to the story, wrongfully hanged for Bean's murders.
So there is a little mention, but not much. You'd think that there would be a lot more if it was true.
Yes, there would be a lot of paper trail there, however tidy they were.
Yeah, but this guy does go on to say
that there is no smoke without fire, and there may have been a cannibalistic family living in the cave around the time. We just will never know.
So basically, make your mind up, mate. It sounds like he'd like them there to be, but there probably isn't.
Well, I mean, you know, you even described this as a legend to begin with. The legends do tend to have their genesis in some kind of truth.
Yeah.
You might be quite distended from what you end up hearing. Yeah. Some numbers would be the first thing to exaggerate, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Thousands or 48. Could have been like a husband, a wife and a child or something over the course of a few months or something. Who knows?
Yeah. No, that's fair. But looking on the bright side, this did not stop writers using the folk legend for inspiration, obviously.
Yeah.
Bean and his family represent the extremes of forbidden human behaviour.
Yes.
People can be thieves and murderers, but it doesn't mean you should be, obviously. Bean is subnormal, murderous, cannibalistic, incestuous, and a thief. Basically, he's a jack of all trades.
He is. He's kind of what, if you were to try and sort of make a modern version, you'd be like a tabloid paper saying, they do this, they do this, this, and then this, this. You just take anything that currently everyone dislikes and make them that.
Exactly. No one would want to imagine themselves as him. But trying to understand a mind like that and how it works is pretty fascinating, basically.
Yeah.
It's morbid fascination. This story was adapted for the 19th century Penny Dreadfuls, which
of course
cool to have a look at some point.
It would be good.
It's the same as Sweeney Todd and stuff, isn't it?
So yes.
That'd be really cool. And again,
and Spring Hill Jack and things.
Yeah. All which we are interested in.
Eels.
And again, for the classic film, The Hills Have Eyes. As we know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they pop up in American Horror Story too. Do you remember Series 5? Not Series 5. Roanoke Nightmare. The family of cannibals, the Pogues, I think they're called.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure
I think it's the same
that
kind
is
of
based on this. Brilliant, brilliant series, by the way, guys. I think we've mentioned it before. So, yeah. I'm a massive American Horror Story fan, and I think that's the best series. And they are bloody terrifying in that. The freakiest thing about this story is that it could actually happen. As we said,
it plays on people's deepest, darkest fears. We don't want to believe that people are capable of doing this, so we are told, "Don't worry, it's just a story." But we all know deep down that it just might not be.
So there you have it. That is the legend of Behind the Hills Have Eyes.
So hills and mountains and the beaches have eyes, caves have eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, don't go outside.
Basically, yeah.
That's what I take from that.
Yeah, don't go outside ever. I don't know.
No.
In a way, it makes me feel safer because I don't live in an environment like that. So, you know, that's positive, I suppose.
Oh, there'll definitely be stories of people doing this in a more urban setting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That would be interesting as well.
In fact, that would have happened, I imagine, because folk stories like this tend to travel. When people started industrialising and moving to cities, they just changed their stories.
Yeah. I love stuff
anyway.
Like this. I love folklore. I think it's just fascinating. There's a whole culture around it. I think it's really great. So,
if
you like folklore, let us know and maybe give us an idea of any folklore stories you might know. It'd be great. So I think that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for listening. As usual, we'll say if you have any horror movie recommendations that you'd like us to give a musical review of and do the ghost gig treatment on.
Absolutely.
If that's what you want us to do.
If you want us to potentially ruin something you love and cherish.
If you want us to ruin something you love and cherish, drop us an email. And the email address is ghostgiguk@gmail.com. That is ghostgiguk@gmail.com. Of course, you can also send us a message on Instagram and set it there. I got through the whole story.
You did really, really well without splurging there.
We usually have to stop and start with the story a lot because I trip up with words. Drop us a message on Facebook. That's what I mean. Just let you all know, I'm very proud of myself because when I did the story, I wrote it all down in my own words and then I've changed it into a font that is easy for dyslexic people to read, and it's worked.
Nice.
So that is brilliant. So we're going to do that from now on.
Do you want to read out the font name in case other people need this? Because some people might actually need this. You know, we can be educational and useful and enrich people's lives.
Yeah, this was recommended to me online. So it's Bandschrift Semi-Light, it's called.
Why would you give a font with something important like this a bizarre name that can't be pronounced?
I don't know, but I also put
it's like the spelling of dyslexia, you know?
I'm making myself sound really stupid here, but I also put it in a font 18 so I can really read it, basically.
You do have quite a modern Swish laptop, though, so it's got a small screen.
But yeah, so again, totally off piece, but if you're dyslexic, that really helps, basically. So,
nice.
Alice's wisdom for the day.
Alice's wisdom!
But seriously, drop us an email. As I said, horror film review, spooky story. We still want more spooky stories. I really want to be able to do it justice. So please send us some stories in if you've got one. Or just say hi. We're building up a little cute little community. So please come and join us because it's really cool and exciting.
It is. It is. We like hearing these things.
Absolutely. So I guess we'll say thank you very much for listening. Anything else you want to add?
Oh, thanks for putting me on the spot. Now I look silly.
Well, they can't see you, so it's fine.
Just take it from me, I look silly.
Okay, Vince looks silly.
Yeah.
So once again, I hope you've had a fantastic Halloween, and we will speak to you again very soon.
We shall.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.